Hello, I'm TJ, and welcome to my garden. In this episode, we're going to be talking about heirlooms and open-pollinated seeds in general. So the distinction there is that heirlooms are generally considered to be varieties from the 1920s to 40s, roughly when hybrid seed varieties started becoming popular on the market. Prior to that, most plants were bred to a type, kind of like we do with dogs, where you have, you know, the Doberman Pinscher, you have a Schnauzer, you have a Great Dane, you have a Poodle. With plants, we've done quite a bit of this as well. Now, the term variety gets used a lot. Variety has very specific meanings in biology and in the legal system. Plant variety legally is a form of nomenclature, and if a plant is a registered variety, that gives certain protections to the original breeder, hybridizer, whatever, for that variety. That term doesn't nicely link to the biological terminology, so it's not what I usually use. But for commercial breeders, that matters a lot, and that's why you see variety on certain things that might not otherwise meet that definition. Biological variety is above a form, which is just a growth pattern in a type of plant, but it is below subspecies, which is a distinct level just below species. So varieties occur naturally. Cultivars are plants that we've made through breeding to have certain traits. Now, in a lot of ways, functionally, cultivar and variety are the same. The distinction is whether it happened in the environment or whether it happened from human decisions. Basically, it's that distinction between natural selection and artificial selection. When it's artificial selection, it's a cultivar or a cultivated type. When it is natural selection, it's a variety. So some plants are very diverse, and over their range, you find a lot of different varieties. Some plants only occur in one variety, and they're all pretty much the same. A form is a growth pattern, and forms can be a little more complex. A form can be because of the environment. Some plants will not grow to a certain height because of nutrients. Generally speaking, when we talk about form in the genetic sense, it's something that will be propagated if you take cuttings or whatever, but they're just minor variations in shape, things like that. There are forms of, say, the honey locust, for instance. Honey locust has forms that don't have prominent spines like most honey locusts do. These occur naturally. They aren't quite a variety. It's just a shape that they sometimes take based on their genetics. A variety involves a lot more traits, usually. So when we're talking about heirlooms, what we're really talking about is cultivars, specifically because cultivar can mean a plant that is a cultivated variety that's got, I say cultivated variety, a cultivated type that is basically like an apple, where we cultivate it by taking cuttings, cloning them, taking cuttings, cloning them, and they maintain their trait that way. That's one type of variety. But the variety more important to us is varieties that propagate reliably from seed. So to be a... See what I said about variety being complicated? I've already misused it a dozen times. Because variety also, in colloquial English, just means a type. These terms, variety, type, form, have very specific meanings in biology, do not share those same meanings in language. So we're talking about different types of plants. So let's try this again. The cultivated type is consistent. And so a lettuce variety that you see how hard it is. I'm going to use it interchangeably from now on because I don't want to keep this being pedantic. I just kind of wanted to illustrate how these terms are very hard to get used to. And even people who've been using them for a few years, myself included, still mix them up pretty reliably. But anyway, a type like black-seeded Simpson, say of lettuce, is a cultivar. We cultivated it to consistently produce black-seeded Simpson. It doesn't have wild variations in leaf shape and color and flavor from plant to plant. Now, occasionally you get a mutation where one is a little different, and occasionally you get accidental hybridization, so they're not always going to be exactly the same type, and there's going to be a little diversity from plant to plant, but overall, it's still going to be what we would consider to be a black-seeded Simpson lettuce. It's going to have that same flavor. It's going to have the same shape, roughly. It may gradually change over time, but over the course of, say, my lifetime, they're pretty much all going to be close to the same. And that's the kind of variety we're talking about, a seed variety. which is a cultivar. this is harder than I thought. So I apologize to my audience. I haven't given this talk in any other format, but just now. This is off the top of my head, sort of. So I do apologize if I'm mixing terms, but you get that way by breeding a plant consistently for a while and weeding out anything you don't like, which we haven't done for a long time. We're going to talk in another episode, probably tomorrow, about land races. And those are actually what most plants were for most of history. But cultivated varieties, which is another term that gets used a lot, even though cultivar and variety are supposed to be different things. But anyway, a cultivated variety is a variety that we have bred to be consistent. And that is what heirloom varieties are. There are also cultivars that have come after hybrids sort of became common that we still sometimes call heirlooms, but technically most people separate them out. There really is no earlier than, other than if a population is really genetically diverse, we generally refer to that as a land race and not a cultivar. Even though a land race is kind of a cultivar, it's just not as consistent. Okay, so I hope I've thoroughly confused the issue. So, an heirloom is any plant from roughly before the 40s that we collect seed from that is open pollinated and that is consistent in the traits it has. There's the best definition I can give. And you can find these everywhere. There are several large heirloom seed companies right now. You have Giant Select Seeds. They sell hybrids as well, but they also sell heirlooms. You have Baker Creek Seeds. They sell entirely heirlooms. You have Seed Savers Exchange, which is entirely heirlooms. You have Native Seed Search, which I believe is almost entirely heirlooms. I think they do have a couple of F1 varieties. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure they're mostly heirlooms. Mostly heirlooms that have been grown in the Southwest region, and a lot of them varieties that were actually developed by Native American peoples. So not a ton of stuff from elsewhere, although there is some. They do sell, you know, conventional vegetables, lettuce, things like that, but they're varieties that have all been at least raised for a few generations in the Southwest, so they're adapted to conditions down here. So there are there are many, many more sources. San Diego Seed Company does mostly heirlooms. I'm sure I'm leaving a bunch of people out. If I have, I apologize. I don't want to seem like I'm giving favoritism to any company or another. Those are just the ones I've done. But there are a ton of places where you can get heirloom varieties. You can also go in and actually create your own cultivars if you're willing to put in the time to sit there and breed for a given trait over many, many, many generations and breed it so that it's consistent. So open pollination heirlooms are the best in general, some of the best varieties to take your seed from because they're consistent and they've been saved for a while. So there's usually reliable seed saving techniques for them. And they usually, though not always, don't have any chance of including hybrid or genetically modified or anything else in their ancestry because they usually predate those. So there's not any real confusion there. There are some exceptions. There is actually such a thing as naturally occurring genetic engineering that happened in, say, sweet potato, which is actually, they've found genetic markers that indicate that modern sweet potatoes are actually the result of naturally occurring issues with agrobacterium, which is a bacteria we actually use now to do genetic transformations, aka genetic engineering. But it also does it naturally. We've basically commandeered the natural process of this organism to do our work. So then that has happened with sweet potatoes. So what you have is you have a genetically modified plant that is naturally genetically modified. How fun is that? But barring things like that or the occasional accident where pollen from one crop gets over to another, for the most part, if you are buying from a reliable source, you're going to get pretty reliable heirloom seed that goes back. It has a connection breeding wise for many, many generations of being the same plant. And with heirlooms, you also get a little bit of ethnobotany thrown in for free because all heirloom varieties have stories attached to them. Usually the story of its origins, other stories. Some of these stories are absolutely not true. Some of these stories are unlikely. And a lot of these stories are actually true. There are plenty of cases where it's something where it might be true, but it might not be as significant as it's made to sound. The Cherokee tomato supposedly was given to a guy by a family who were Cherokee. It's said to have been given to him by the Cherokee Indians, but that could just be any random person of Cherokee descent, so who knows? That story kind of doesn't go back very far. There's a watermelon variety that's kind of popular that supposedly was found in a Native American dig site, the Seeds Fort were, and they were successfully germinated. The problem with that is watermelon is introduced. Watermelon is actually native to Africa, and Native Americans, to the best of our knowledge, never had this plant. We don't find any evidence of seed or anything else anywhere in North America until they're introduced much, much later. So the likelihood is pretty small that that story is true. There's a variety of pea that was supposedly found in an ancient Egyptian tomb and germinated. There may be some truth to that, but I have yet to find a source which actually gives any citations to a project to germinate any seed taken from a tomb. So whether or not that one's true is kind of up in the air. But even if these stories aren't true, they're kind of fun, and they do tell a lot about the sort of stories we like to make up about the things that are around us on an everyday basis. And in some cases, the seeds, like, say, Hidatsa Shield, or other seeds that are linked to real peoples, are actually linked to those peoples, and they have a long history with the people who raised them. Like, the Hidatsa have several varieties of bean and corn and other plants that they've maintained for generations and are now available as heirloom varieties. And so you can learn a lot about the peoples by the plants they grew. So that's when I say that you get a little free ethnobotany thrown in there, no extra charge. Just make sure that you don't take every story about an heirloom at face value. I mean, enjoy the stories for what they are, but don't assume they're absolutely true until you've found some kind of third-party verification, right? Some historical document showing it, some sort of chain of custody that shows that these seeds came from where people say they came from or who they came from. Something to show that there's an actual history there versus just people telling stories. Not that there's that much wrong with people telling stories. It's just the distinction between accurate, actionable information and stories that may just be fun to talk about. Now, as for the actual methods of saving seed, heirlooms kind of have an added benefit in that because they've been saved for many generations, it's usually pretty easy to find information. So, for instance, with, say, lettuce, you wait until those seed heads start to reach maturity, right? You let the lettuce grow well past when you would normally harvest it until it bolts or produces flowers. You let the flowers do their thing. When they're all done, they'll start to dry up and produce the seeds. And then you can, usually what I do is I just put like a paper bag over them or something so that when the seeds are all done, they all just drop out in the paper bag. You snap that off. You toss the rest of the lettuce plant on your compost heap. It's done by then. And then you sort the seed from the chaff being all the other material in there that's not seed. And a lot of dry seeds are just that easy to do. Beans, you can do the same thing with, kind of. You can actually let the pods dry out on the plant, pick the dried pods, crush them up to loosen out the seeds, and then blow off, you know, all the pod material and stuff like that until you just have the seeds. The seeds are heavier than the chaff, especially in the case of beans, so it's pretty easy to just winnow or blow away. You can either winnow by literally blowing with your mouth. You can toss things up in the air and kind of let the wind, if it's a light wind, take it away. The only issue with those methods is you have to make sure that the seed's not light enough to blow off itself. The other category of seed that's kind of more difficult to save are a lot of things like tomatoes and other things that are stored in some kind of a gel. Because generally speaking, if there's a gel around the seed in the fruit, then there are going to be inhibitors in there to keep that moist seed from germinating. And so with a lot of those, what you do is called fermentation, where you actually put them in like a cup of water with the gel and the seed in there. And then you mix those up really good. And then the seed will eventually release from the gel and fall. And the gel will kind of rot and ferment at the top. And that'll also help break down all those agents that prevent seeds from germinating. Then you just pour off the bad stuff at the top, essentially, and sort the seeds out from the bottom of the liquid. So, you know, pour them out on a towel, let them dry off. And once those are dry, completely dry, you have to let them completely dry out. Once they're completely dry, you can store those and use them within the next, in the case of tomatoes, 5 to 10 years. They actually have a really long shelf life. You just get less germination as time goes on. Some plants, like all the grains, are pretty easy to save that way as well. They're dry seeds. There are a few plants that have more complex methods you have to engage in. That's usually because They have some other inhibitor. There are a few plants, although nothing we really eat. Luckily, most crops have been bred to be easy to save seed from, so they're not usually a big problem. But there are a few plants that are collected from the wild that are just now being brought into cultivation because they have maybe some food value or something. And some of those rely on things like they need to be exposed to smoke before they'll germinate, things that grow in areas that tend to have wildfires. There are some plants, and even actually some domesticated varieties, where you have to score or scarify the seeds. There are some varieties of plants that will only grow after they've been frozen, so you have to put them in the fridge. But generally speaking, if it's an heirloom variety, any special instructions for seed saving, you can usually find it the same place you got the seed. They've been saved for many generations. People know how to do these reliably. They're not that difficult a thing. Okay, so in the next episode, I'm going to talk about land races. And in the following episode after that, I'm going to talk about self-fertile varieties, so-called selfing. And then in the last one, we're going to talk about some projects and experiments you can do with plants over many generations, some breeding experiments and stuff that kind of break all the rules we've already set up. So go ahead and stay tuned for all that. If you like the show and you know any other gardeners out there, especially those who work in a school gardening or community gardening sphere, definitely share the episode with them. See if they get some value from it. Help grow the audience a little and hopefully help them out. Other than that, you can subscribe to this at podcast.tjsgarden.com. You can follow everything I'm doing at tjsgarden.com. And if you go to the contact page on there, you can shoot me a message if you have any questions or just, you know, any feedback whatsoever from the episode. So go forth. Have a great day and enjoy your garden. Bye.